I'm an addict. My name is Tim. I'm grateful to be alive. I'm grateful to be in a meeting in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I'll tell you, I struggled with this topic, right? Like, it's so crazy, right? Because I've done this so many times, and I know that whenever I sit down and I invite God in, the right things are going to come out, right? And, you know, I read probably every piece of literature that I own looking for something to draw from, right? And, you know, my friend told me, you know, that we're not programmed like that, right? Like, we're, we sit down and we let come out, right, what comes out. So probably the most significant thing of my recovery, right, is I had a time in my life that I had a whole bunch of consequences catching up with me, right? Like, when I first got to the rooms, I remember I sat down with that counselor at that place that they sent me to, and I had this list of counties that had all these warrants out for me, right, and all these bills to pay. And I remember saying, how the hell am I going to do this? He said, one place at a time, right? One place at a time. And then he said, you know, it's like recovery. It's one day at a time. He said, you just take it one bill at a time. So I started this thing. I was working for this lady. She was this fly-by-night contractor. And she was paying me probably about $300 a week. And I would take $20 a week, and I'd pay Galveston County. That's the county that I lived in. And, like, that's the one that I did not want them to come grab me because I was going to be there a little while. So I'd take and I'd pay $20 a time, $20 a time. And I remember probably my second year in the rooms, right, and I paid those fines off. And I tell you all that to tell you this, like, that the sense of purpose and the sense of hope that I received from that time in my life, right, like, it carried me through for the next 365 days solid, right? Like, it was probably the first thing that I was able to accomplish in my adult life all by myself, right? Without having to call my grandmother or my mother or my father and say, I need you to bail me out one more time, right? Like, I need your help one more time, you know? And when I came to the rooms, I didn't plan on sticking around, right? Like, I came in to get the heat off, right? Like, they were catching up to me. And I knew that it was time, and I remember I was out on felony bond, and part of my bond stipulations was I was going to take a drug test every time they reset me, right? And I'd reset this thing five times, and I failed every single one of those drug tests, every single one of them, right? You know, the guy that was administering them, he said, you might want to go in there and tell the judge you need some help. I said, you think? You think? And the last time I went in there, the insanity of active addiction, right? Like, I went to Walmart. I don't know if any of y'all know about Sure Gel, Starter Gel. I had a gallon of water and a bag of Starter Gel and dumped it in there, right? And I'm choking this shit down while I'm shoving shit up my nose at the same time. And the insanity said that it was going to work. Right? This time was going to be different. The fifth time was going to be different, right? And that judge looked at me and he said, he just waiting on the dam to break, right? And finally they said, we're not going to wait no more, son. You know, and they put me in custody, and I had to go sit down for a little while. You know, but little did I know at that time, right, that I was setting forth on this road that I've been on for, you know, it's been over 6 years, but what I have today is a little over 6 years clean today, right? By the grace of God, through the program of Narcotics Anonymous, right? Like, and I have a choice in this today, right? Because recovery for me no longer is about just staying clean, right? Like, I don't come to meetings and I don't share a message just to fucking stay clean anymore, right? Like, it's more about how am I going to have a better quality of life today? Right? Like, how can I practice these principles in all of my affairs today? How can I treat somebody with kindness whenever I truly do not like that motherfucker? right? How can I be a better boss today? How can I be a better partner in my relationship today, right? And I'll tell you right now, that's the one I struggle with the most, you know? And it never seems to fail that the person that is closest to me is the one that gets hurt the worst, right? You know, and one thing that Narcotics Anonymous and this message that we carry, right, has taught me is that I don't have to live my yesterdays anymore, right? Like, I don't have to continue to replay the things that got me to where I was, right? Like, I have hope today. I have a message that teaches me that one day at a time, I can be a new person today, right? You know, one of my favorite lines in the book is on page 79 in Recovery and Relapse, right? And it's Recovery and Relapse. Never have we seen a person relapse who lives the Narcotics Anonymous program, right? And it's not saying work. It doesn't say how many fucking meetings I attend or how many service positions I hold, right? How am I living today? How am I showing up in my everyday life outside of the rooms, outside of these walls, right? What kind of person am I being today? You know, and our message is that way, right? Like, we have one message only, right? It's a promise of hope. It's a message of hope and a promise of freedom, right? Mm-hmm. And I've received that freedom, right? You know, but I had to do some work to get there too. I had to surrender completely. I love what the speaker was talking about in there, right? You know, one thing that I was taught early on about the steps with my sponsor is honesty and open-mindedness and willingness is in every single step, right? Through honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, I receive surrender, right? Through honesty, open-mindedness, willingness, and surrender, I receive hope, right? Like, I carry each principle from the preceding step into the next one, and I start to live these things, and I don't even know it anymore, right? Whenever I treat my employees with kindness instead of discernment, right? Like, or I'm not discernment. I can't even think of the word right at this moment. But, you know, one of the biggest things of my life is I'm a boss. I employ a lot of people, right? And previously I used to treat people pretty badly that worked for me. And through recovery, right, and through changing the way that I am living, I've been able to treat people with kindness now, right? And that's huge for me because that's the way that I want to be treated, right? Like, that's what I want more than anything else, is just to be treated like a normal person, you know? But I'm not fucking normal, and I don't treat people that way, so I don't get treated that way in return. So, you know, I had to find a way through these steps and through these principles that I could become that change that I was seeking. And you know, through the rooms and through the message that's shared, I received that hope that has helped me guide these different people through my life, right? And hear this message, this life-saving message of hope. I was reading earlier, and I was reading Tradition 5, and I was reading, went on and I read Tradition 10. One thing that I love about the traditions, where it took me, is what our message truly means, right? And like, it is that singular message of hope, and we carry it with something called fidelity, right? You know, and fidelity is something that is unwavering. It's unwavering, right? Like, it does not change. No matter what the particular parameters of my story are, right, the message of Narcotics Anonymous remains the same. You know, and that's a hard thing to do in these rooms these days, right? All the personalities, all the cliques, right? And every group's got them. And I struggled with that for a long time, too. You know, but through working steps and through taking some people through the steps, right? Like, I found out that I didn't want to be that person anymore either. I didn't want to be that person that that treated people that way. So just for today, I want to use the principle of hope as a platform to save somebody, right? To carry a message that could save somebody. So I keep coming back. I keep showing up, right? And I keep doing the work. Narcotics Anonymous has given me far more than I could ever give it. And because of that, I am now a son again, right? I'm a brother. I'm a spouse. I'm an employee, right? Like, I got all of those things from a message that was carried to me. And that message has always been hope, right? So I don't know if I filled my 20 minutes up yet.
Too long.
But y'all keep pouring in here, and I keep getting hotter. So thank you for having me. I thank the convention, right? And thank Narcotics Anonymous for this life. That's all I have.
That's right.
Awesome. Thank you. Good job.
Hi, everyone. I'm an addict named Sarah.
Sarah.
And thank you, Tim. So Tim mentioned Tradition 5, and, you know, I really don't like sharing on topics because it means I have to study, and I've never liked homework. So last night, at the very last minute, I took out all my literature, and I studied. And I was thinking, like, what is hope? Like, where in the literature do I find hope? I've got step 2, I've got tradition 5. And in the basic text, and of course I didn't bring my basic text, but it says, it talks about our promise, right? You know, it says our message is hope and the promise of freedom. That's what hope is. That's what our message is hope. And so I was reading, we've got this great literature. This is actually a book written on just the traditions, and it's actually a workbook. It's got questions and everything. It's really cool. This was the first time I opened it, you know, so now I know.
Came out 3 years ago.
I know, right? But yeah, who knew? It's actually some really cool shit. So I just wanted to, share a little bit about, like, what it was like for me when I first got here. And, they're here. I didn't realize that I had been living without hope. You know, I thought I was just going to, like, I'd had hopes when I was younger, like in my childhood and even in my adolescence, I had some hopes. You know, I had some lofty goals and dreams. And as time went by and I kept burning bridges and I kept wasting opportunities, you know, it kind of just became like, well, this is just what life's going to be. I'm going to be, you know, waiting tables for the rest of my life. And not like a career server, just getting by. And I'm going to have to, you know, just, I live to use and I use to live. You know, I would set an alarm every morning at like 2 o'clock. At 2 o'clock a.m. so I could get high, so I could go back to sleep, so I could wake up at 6 a.m. so I could get high again, so I could go back to sleep, so I could wake up at 10, get high, and then get my ass to work. And somehow I made it through a whole shift most days. And then I'd go home and I'd use until I pass out. And, you know, it's just that's the way it was, you know, for a couple of years. I also was... how do they put it? A ward of the state, maybe not a ward. I was a prisoner for a little while, and that's and they like put me back in jail after my first failed drug test. I'm a little jealous that you got 5, but it left an impression. You know, that left an impression, and I had been to Narcotics Anonymous before at the, you know, urging of my lawyer at the time, you know, it was for a drug charge that I was convicted. But, you know, I didn't really take it seriously. I was just like, you know, I just wanted to get the heat off. And when I came back out of jail the second time and I came back to Narcotics Anonymous, I was like, okay, maybe there's something to do with this. You know, I can't seem to pass a drug screen. And that began my journey. You know, that was back in, God, that was, I'm going to show my age. That was, I was 22 years old. That was back in 1999. And you know, I went through this literature last night and I highlighted all this stuff and I have every intention of reading it, and maybe I still will. But you know, what I heard tonight is, like, I've been given this incredible freedom. When I got here, I just wanted to get the police off my back. I just wanted to get through probation and go back to living my shallow, unsatisfying life, you know, where, you know, I live to use and use to live. And I didn't get it right away, you know. It was like 18 months before I finally picked a clean date I wanted to stick with. And I stuck with it for years, and I relapsed. And then I got another clean date, and then I stuck with that for years, and I relapsed. And I kept that for a couple of years, and then I relapsed. And for a long time, I was like, well, this is kind of like how it was in active addiction. Like, this is just how it's going to be. You know, I'm going to get some clean. I'm going to be clean most of the time. And, you know, I never start coming to Narcotics Anonymous because that's, I'm a lifer. I have nowhere else to go. The relationships I've built in this program sustain me in a way that I require it now. You know, it was a gift. It was a luxury when I first got here. Now it's a requirement. And I remember one time at a meeting at my home group, there was a guy who came in and he was celebrating 10 years clean. And I had known him for like, you know, 10 years. And he talked a little bit about how he had struggled to stay clean for years, and he'd relapsed in the same way I relapsed. Like, he would get some time and he would use again, and then he would get some more time and then he would use again. And he finally got 10 years of clean. And I think, no, his wife is not in here, but that would have been cool if she was. But anyway, that brought me so much hope. It gave me the idea, because I had just used again, you know, at this meeting, not at the meeting, but, you know, like the day before the meeting. And I was coming back in, picking up my next white key tag. And I let him know, it's like, you've given me so much hope. I've never known anyone to relapse the way I relapsed and to actually get 10 years clean, you know. In my eyes, that was like the magic number or something. But if I make it to October 21st, I will have 12 years clean this year. And that's like, that's freaking cool. Like, and it's like, I didn't have to stop at year 6, which was the highest I'd ever been before. And I didn't have to stop at year 10, which was the magic number. Like, you know, I'm just, it's a just for today program, and I'm living and enjoying life and loving what I have and having what I love. And I have purpose today. And I don't use because of a number. I mean, I don't not use because of a number today. You know, I don't use today because it's no longer, it would be out of the ordinary, you know? I was talking with a sponsee just before this workshop. You know, even at a Narcotics Anonymous convention, you know, we're not 100% safe. Mm-hmm. They they were taking a walk outside, and there was a gentleman who asked her, you know where I can smoke? And she's like, well, yeah, the smoking area is over here. And he's like, well, no, I'm here for my mother's wedding, but, you know, I see the symbols, and I know what this is. I need to find a place where I can smoke. And they were like, oh, okay. And I'll, you know, if you get in touch with them later, you know, I'll let them tell the story. But, you know, they were talking to me about it, and they were talking about the way it made them feel, how unsafe and how, like, shocked they were that for just half a second, they were like, oh, that, yeah, I'll come with you. Let me try some of that, you know? And they've got a few years under their belt. And they've gone through some shit clean. And, I what I told them is that, you know, and even though I just said it would be out of the ordinary for me to get high tonight, you know, it will still always be my first thought, you know, even with, I don't know when that will change, you know, maybe it'll change someday. It hasn't changed yet, you know, but my first thought is always, you know, I was going to say the easier, softer route. I've been told this is the easier, softer route. It doesn't feel like that all the time, but you know, but yeah, that's my way I always go. But anyway, I kind of wanted to share that. So thank you, Tim, for what you shared tonight. That kind of like, it brought like what really is important to the forefront of my mind. We still got a lot of time. So when I first got there, you know, I didn't realize I was living without hope. And I got to Narcotics Anonymous, and I was seeing the people around me, and they were happy, and they seemed at ease with themselves. They had peace of mind and calm of heart, and they remembered my name when I came back. That was a big deal. They told me to keep coming back. They gave me hugs. And eventually I stuck around. You know, whether I was clean or not on any given day was still up in the air at that point. But, you know, I was finally seeing some of the magic that happens in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. And I was learning how to share honestly. And the way I grew up, like, I was a great imitator. I was a social chameleon. You know, I was everything you wanted me to be or everything I thought you wanted me to be. And I made good grades. I was good with other things. And, you know, I did what I thought needed to happen in order for me to do that. Well, I tried to do that with Narcotics Anonymous in the way I shared. And, you know, people were still, like, appearing really concerned about me. Like, you know, no one was buying it. Like, you know, I learned the language, I learned all the slogans, and just no one was buying it. And what I wanted to read out of the Tradition 5 out of this book, it's on page 84, some good shit. It says, when we live the program, read the literature, listen to the readings, practice these principles, and apply our traditions, we really don't have to worry too much about our message. Our recovery will speak for itself. Each of us carries a message. We are always examples of recovery in action, whether we mean to be or not. So the reason why people were still so concerned about me is, like, I'm talking in meetings and I'm sharing, I'm saying all this really great stuff, but my life, you know, what happened outside of the meetings was just a shambles. You know, I was a predator in my early days in recovery. You know, I really liked those cute newcomers, and I learned better. You know, it took a woman in recovery, one of my friends was like, Sarah, just give them a chance. You're not even giving them a chance. So that kind of took my head out of my ass a little bit. I still married a cute newcomer and had his baby, but that's another story. And but until the point of what I'm trying to say is, like, until I started to learn how to share honestly, like, not Amy's experience, not Joe's experience, not regurgitating what I've heard in meetings, but actually sharing this is what I'm going through right now, and I'm staying clean anyway. I think that might be when I started actually carrying a message of hope. Because sometimes that's all I've got. It's like, you know, life is really freaking lifey right now, and I'm going to stay clean anyway. And that's what it is. And it goes on to say, I love these glasses because they're so cute, but I hate that I have to wear them. It says, thank you. There are times when we need a restoration to hope, just as we need a restoration to sanity. The two may be closely related. Sometimes we can borrow someone else's faith when ours is lacking. Sometimes our empathy carries us through. Even when we don't have much hope for ourselves, we can still get excited for the member picking up a key tag or a medallion, or the addict experiencing new freedom and recovery. As we experience surprise, joy, and sometimes bitter disappointment, we learn that the difference between hope and fantasy, hope becomes more solid and more secure than our passing wishes or expectations. So when I was reading this, I was thinking about a time, it was about a year ago, I lost my job. I wasn't fired, but I was laid. My company, what I thought was going to be my forever job, I loved it. I worked from home. I had the most amazing manager, the most amazing team, the most amazing everything. And they got bought out by another company, and the other company chose not to hire me. And so it was heartbreaking in a little bit, but, you know, the other little bit of it was kind of like, well, I get to close out this company. I was like literally the last man standing at the company, just closing out the books. And it was really difficult because I was looking for a new job for a long time. And I would interview here and there, and it was around like December, January, February. No one was hiring. At least they weren't hiring me. And it was a time when I really felt like I was afraid, you know. I was feeling hopeless. I was like, you know, my family is a two-income family, and we've always been that way, and maybe we could make it on one income, but things would have to change, and I don't want that. And but I stuck through it, you know. What I did was I went to, I don't know if anyone else has closed out the books for a company, but there's a lot of downtime when you're doing that. And, you know, one of the great things about the other company that bought my forever company is they just kind of left me to my own devices, and they still paid me. So I, you know, this is not the most displaying of integrity thing that I did, but I went to a lot of meetings. I went to a lot of online meetings, and I shared about it at a lot of meetings, and I got a lot of hope from the people that shared. It's like, you know, I have, you know, thanks to Narcotics Anonymous, thanks to the, you know, all the service positions I've taken, you know, they've given me some sort of skills. You know, I can speak publicly. I can take notes. I can be diplomatic. I can be professional. I didn't know how to do any of that when I first got here. And it was not like a quick, easy, you know, I had to have some practice in the rooms. You know, I grew up very publicly and in service, and y'all allowed me that, so thank you for that. But eventually I did get a new job, and it's not the same. I don't think it's my forever company, but they also pay me, so that's good. And it was right on time, too, you know? And I talk about, you know, the faith that I have about, like, financial, you know, romances and finances, the two things we never want to turn over. And I always say, you know, I have never gone without all of my needs met and most of my wants, if I'm going to be really honest about it. You know, I've never gone hungry, never been homeless due to, you know, except for, you know, when I, you know, was using. But even then, I wasn't like shelterless. You know, I always had a place to stay. So yeah, I have some faith that things are going to turn out the way they're supposed to, and they did this time. And I wanted to share that in particular because I'm not going through the situation again, but my husband is 2 days ago, he was going through the exact same situation, and he gave me permission to share on it right before the meeting. Yeah, so, and you know, my first reaction was not like, oh my God, what are we going to do? Because he's the breadwinner. But my reaction was more like, you know, are you going to be okay? Are you okay? And he's fine, you know. And from what I hear is he's being inundated with leads, so that's a good thing. Yeah, but, you know, sometimes we do need a restoration to hope. And sometimes I have to borrow other people's hope just to get by. And that's okay. You know, that's the great thing about hope is it's the one spiritual principle that I can give away. And y'all can give it away too. And it's a never-ending supply. So the last thing, how am I doing? Should I shut up?
No.
Okay. The last thing I'm going to share about and read about is empathy and connection are the beginning. We start to see our experience as a resource. Everything we go through can become a tool to help someone who is suffering. We may gain wisdom, or we may simply be able to say, I went through that and I stayed clean. We experience a powerful connection when we hear someone tell our story or share something about themselves that we had guarded as a deep secret. Our work carrying the message means that no pain is wasted. When we are able to use our own suffering to help another addict get through a day clean, we start to feel that sense of purpose in our lives that we see in our groups. Our stories are the keys to freedom. And so the last little story I want to share is something I wouldn't, you know, 10, 15 years ago, I would not have shared this in an open meeting. 15 years ago, it was very much a dark secret, and it was very shameful. I went through a period of time clean, where I was doing a lot of sex seeking. And this goes beyond going out to an event or somewhere and meeting someone and, you know, hitting it off and being like, hey, come back to my place. It's like I was actively searching, you know, for one person for one day for one purpose. And I, you know, sometimes I had 3 a week, you know, and my poor husband, he hasn't heard the details about it before now, but but I'm okay with sharing it for right now. If you haven't put the, you know, one and one together, this is my husband. Yeah. So, but anyway, it was a big, deep, dark secret, and I was very ashamed of myself. And I really I didn't understand why I was doing it. It's like, you know, this had never been. I'd never put myself out there like that, like in dangerous situations. Like, you know, I'm glad they let me leave when we were done, you know, because that's a very real possibility for a woman, you know, entering into a situation where, you know, with a complete stranger. And it's, you know, I guess God was looking out for me, but I was really ashamed, and it was killing my self-esteem and my self-worth, and I just felt like a complete degenerate, like no one has ever done this before. And I was crying about it at a meeting one time, you know, in very general terms, of course, because I couldn't share about it in a meeting, because not only am I doing that, but I'm a woman and I'm doing that, and that is unacceptable. And so I grabbed a couple of the women, or of two women that I knew loved me and that I knew I could trust. And I took them outside the meeting, and we went into my car and we rolled up the windows and locked the doors. And I told them my deep, dark, shameful secret. And they were like, oh, honey, I've done that. And it was like, oh, I'm not alone. And from that point on, you know, that behavior that I tried so badly to stop and just couldn't, like, you know, every day I would just, it was over and over, and it was killing me spiritually. And from that point, you know, I haven't done that in, I don't know, 15 years. Yeah, and that's what those women gave me, was hope. Like, you know, that I had choices, that I didn't have to be a slave to my mind, you know, or my impulses. And I think that's really all I got. I hope y'all got something out of that. It's very interesting. I was talking with another sponsee earlier about, like, the freedom in putting your cards on the table, so to say, you know, like, you know, when I'm able to share what's going on with me and my deep, dark stuff, my ugly stuff, and even be recorded, that's pretty cool. There goes my political career. But, you know, when I'm able to do that, you know, I don't have to worry about what anyone else says or thinks about me, because, you know, I've taken ownership of my stuff, and that's a huge freedom. And and I really do think I'm done. Thank you so much for the opportunity to do this workshop. Thank you, Tim, for your experience, strength, and hope. And that's all I got. Love y'all.